New York State Senator John Brooks. I guess, I don't know if it took place or will take place, though the storm has something to do with it, regarding the capability. You know, we talk about the gyms of opening. Well, what about the bowling alleys? Lots of need here. Business, bowling alley owners and everything else. Haven't spoke to him in a while. Always good to have him back on the program. Senator, great to have you, sir.
You too, Jay. Good to be with you again.
Are you staying safe, healthy? How'd you make out with the storm?
I have an addition in the backyard that's about 50 feet long called a tree from my neighbor. So we're working on that right now.
We'll get into that in a second. Let's talk bowling alleys. I just had a gym owner on, and he's right. I haven't heard a lot of feedback regarding, you know, when a gym's opening. Bowling alleys come into mind as well, and I know you're at the forefront of it. Did you have that press conference yet, or is it coming about?
No, we did have it. We ended up. With the storm coming, a lot of the news media had to go to storm coverage. What we did is we videoed the things to put it up on the internet, sent some tapes to various people, just going over the plan that was put together that's exceptionally workable, number one. I think some of the points I heard the end of the conversation before. When we look at these bowling alleys, massive facilities, as you know, and they have incredible property tax. Some closing in on $200,000, and they've been closed basically for 5 months, and they're paying out of their pockets those taxes. The equipment in a bowling alley requires continuous use of air conditioning units, so the utility bills, even though they're closed, are high. So on the one side, they have some significant financial challenges, and the folks in the bowling industry really did a good job in the plan they put together.
State Senator John Brooks. Now, Senator, I'm going to, right off the bat, when I think of bowling alleys, now help me out here. I'll play devil's advocate with you, okay?
Yeah.
When I think of bowling alleys, I think of bowling balls. And I think of putting my sweet little fingers in a bowling ball, not knowing what I am delving into, sir, if you know what I'm talking about. So, in essence, the fear of the bowling alley presents itself quite clear.
Yep.
How do you combat that theory?
So when I met with the folks, I came in with a set of what I'll call obstacles. How are we addressing those? So certainly the bowling ball is an issue. And the proposal that we have now is that initially the bowling alleys are opened with individuals providing both their own ball and their own shoes. So we don't have that situation. But they went out of their way to show me how they clean both the shoes and the balls to make it safe. But we'll go backwards a couple of steps because I think it's important to understand how broadly they looked at this problem. We begin, as you know, one of the challenges we've had with this virus when we know that somebody is exposed is the ability to track people that were there or in contact with that person. That's been a major problem. What the bowling alleys are proposing is they would make use of a reservation system. They would know everybody that was coming to the bowling alley when they came and have a contact number, at least for the group. Secondly, at the bowling alley, they're going to use social distancing every other parking space. When you come into the bowling alley, you're going through a series of screening questions as well as a temperature check. The alleys will be open every other alley with limitation on how many people are there. They're going to put a limitation of an hour and a half bowling and one appointment and then leave 30 minutes for cleaning of that alley. The alleys being used will rotate on an odd day. The odd-numbered lanes would be open. On an even day, the even-numbered lanes are open, so there's constant cleaning going on there. As I said, in the beginning, you're restricted to your own equipment. If you want to use the food services, they'll use waiters and waitresses to take your order, so people are going to remain just in the area immediately located by that lane, and they will maintain spacing of 6 feet with everybody. Masks will be required the whole time, and when they check out, the lane will be clean. Now, some of the advantages here, because they're going to have these computerized systems, if we find out 2 weeks later that somebody that was at the bowling alley that day has tested positive, we we know everybody that was at the lane that day in the time frames that were involved, and the health agencies have the a punch list, if you will, of people to contact to follow up. So when you take a realistic look at what they're doing, and then you look at how they do clean the equipment and desanitize it after each use, I think we could well get to the point that with the using leased or rented balls in addition to bringing your own in. The other thing that was important that we realized is the clientele. We've got the bowling leagues. We understand that, and that is a driving factor for their profit. But they also have programs where they're bringing in seniors during the day for some enjoyment. They're bringing in young students, young individuals. And what I was surprised to learn is how many talented high school students in particular that we have that are getting scholarships for bowling. Session that we had the other day, there were two girls from Long Island in New Jersey, for example. The bowling alleys were open. They traveled to New Jersey and won a bowling tournament there. And they are people on their way to college scholarships. And the other group that was there was disabled people. And you have a number of programs that many of the bowling alleys put together for people with disabilities so they can enjoy bowling too. So, you know, there's a huge audience that's serviced. There is a solid plan to maintain safety and cleanliness in the bowling alley. There's a plan that allows us to contact people if somebody does become infected. And again, finally, they are a major contributor, both from an employment standpoint, with over 9,000, almost 10,000 employees in bowling alleys, and incredible property tax payments to our communities. As I say, the one alley that they talked to, they had early in the year made a $180,000 payment, and I think they just got a bill that's due in August for $50,000, and they haven't been open for 5 months. That stuff's coming out of their pockets and their savings, and a lot of these bowling alleys now are up against it with the cash. Well,
no doubt. State Senator John Brooks. Listen, bowling alleys are in that. You know, I look at bowling alleys like the gyms. To me, you know, to me, everybody's essential, Senator, you know, as far as a business owner. And quite frankly, you know, they need to open, too. You could safely do so. You know, the numbers pretty much, you know, speak for themselves as far as, you know, how the folks have handled this. They've adhered to the messages and everything else. You know, the governor's done a pretty good job overall. You know, nursing homes, as I always say, that's a separate area for another day. But with that being said, there are still people out there that need to open it up. And you need everybody involved if you're going to have a strong economy. Bowling alleys, to me, are a part of that. So without question. And again, I like the fact the odd even days. I like that waitresses come over. You don't have to go up to those counters. And my only other fear was somebody else picking up my bowling ball. But as you say, you know, you're not going to have that issue. So that, to me, is good. So let's see if we could somehow. I mean, have you had any feedback from Albany on this? I mean, you're right there. I mean, you're close to the action more so than others. What about feedback on bowling alleys?
I have been talking to the folks up in Albany on a regular basis. The plan that has submitted is under active review. I think, you know, when you think about the clock that's running as far as the financial side of this, there are a number of bowling alleys, none in New York yet, have gone under because people can't carry the financial drain. I think some of these folks are getting close. I'm not saying they're about to go bankrupt, but they are really up against it. That's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of tax revenue we lose. And most of these bowling alleys are family-owned. They have them 30, 40 years. Everything they have is in those businesses. So I think there's an economic incentive. I do believe that the health and safety issues and concerns, plus the ability to contact, all of those things have been addressed in the plan that they put forward. And in particular, we had some of the handicapped people there, and we didn't open up bowling, but they threw a couple of balls, and you could see how important that was to them.
Hey, listen, that is a big Oliver family tradition. We love to play a couple of games on a Saturday night without question. We miss it. So we look forward to some good news in that respect. And by the way, excellent point. You're right. A lot of these owners, you know, they have had these alleys going for 30, 40, 50, I mean, in the family, a long time, decades. That's a great point. And you know what? This is a tradition in communities. You know, it's so important to keep it alive. Now, I only got a couple of minutes. I want to get your take as far as the handling of Assayas, Senator Brooks. In your estimation here, now you got a tree in your backyard. I get it. But in your estimation, have they dropped the ball? Now, we've been speaking to them, you know, these substations and everything else, not up to speed. The focal point of what we have seen, you got about 150,000 now without power. They say they'll get everybody on the next day or two. Give me your take for a couple here. Where do you find, is PSEG at the focal point here of failure?
Yeah, we actually had a press conference at their headquarters early yesterday morning. We basically took their head off. Yes, they failed, number one. They pushed some of it to the telephone systems and the rest. Across the board, we've got to stop this nonsense of having a scapegoat to turn to. Your responsibility is to put response programs together for these catastrophic events. One of the reasons why we moved to them was how poorly things were handled in Sandy. It is inexcusable for somebody to say, hey, we had a problem with the phones. It's not our fault. It's some BIOS or whoever. We're in a situation, they, as soon as they knew that phone system was down, they should have been out with the media letting people know how to contact them with regards to losses that are down. They just, there's no excuse for what happened yesterday. And, you know, we've got this position across the board now. When we have catastrophic events, number one, we're proving that we're not ready. You know, we've had challenges with the pandemic. Sandy, we saw what happened. We should have been on that in a second. They dropped the ball completely. They asked us yesterday to in the afternoon to come to what was originally a Zoom call, which became a telephone call to listen to a recorded message, and then at the very end you could ask questions. What is that? You know, I hung up the phone and I went back to other things. I didn't have time to listen to somebody, you know, taking a bow for certain things. That was a failure yesterday. We made it clear to them. We've asked that the Attorney General do an investigation. The governor is going to have the public safety group take a look at it. They failed. And not only did they fail, but LIPA failed. LIPA's responsibility is to oversee what they're doing. LIPA just hired a new financial person with an excessive salary. Maybe save that money and get on top of PSE&G and find out what happened, how they're going to change it. We just can't have excuses. This is life and death when it comes to providing electricity to many of our homes. And these power lines that were down, one of the things I pointed out, you know, two groups we had to compliment during the storm. One is the police, who were out there controlling traffic and other emergencies. And the other thing is the volunteer firemen. You know, these guys aren't paid. They're the best disaster response mechanism we have on Long Island. They come because they care. They're trained. Whatever situation they come to, they find a way to try to resolve it. We need PSE&G to take a look at how it is that a fire department can come and get control of a situation in a matter of minutes. And when you're in a situation and you're not sure what to do, you've tried to finger point. Your responsibility is to put together a disaster plan. Your responsibility is to have a backup plan if something doesn't work. And your responsibility is not to sit in a room and figure out who you're going to blame. But they should have had information out on the media that people knew the phone systems were down. They should have had a priority system. They should have been contacting the fire departments to find out where they had significant hazardous situations. Situations where somebody can respond to. They failed yesterday. They've got probably a matter of weeks to get together because we're in the middle of hurricane season. We can get a storm next couple of weeks for all you know. And we too are going to have to start looking at some stuff. You know, most of the damage is fallen trees. Many of it is trees close to roadways. We're going to have to start looking at some things there. And you know, we haven't seen a lot of storm activity since Sandy. Many of the trees we have in homes have gotten to be excessively high. When they fall, they're going to go multiple layers of property. Maybe we've got to start thinking about when you've got a tree that's 40, 50 feet high, You got to have somebody come and inspect it in advance to make sure that it's not likely to fall. And maybe you have to start to assume financial responsibility. You know, we treat that today as an act of God. But if you've got a 60-foot tree in a neighborhood where everybody is, say, has 40-foot plots just for number, that thing's going multiple houses down the block if it falls. Maybe we have to start examining some of that stuff. So once again, we have an opportunity to learn from, but once again, we had an opportunity that proved to us that our disaster planning is not where it should be.
Three quick things. I'll answer that. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the police. You know, we talk about taking dollars and everything else and look what's, you know, the disrespect. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, that's who we look to for safety. When it comes to safety, that's the overall word. That's a common denominator. That should be in everybody's vocabulary. We look to police. One. Two, I think you're right. You know, aesthetics. Great trees look, you know, they're wonderful. They're beautiful. I had one for 25 years in my yard, a big old oak. You know, it was probably 75 years old. But you're right. Sometimes we have to look at that aspect. And maybe we have to have inspections in every community to see if these trees need to come down. You know, it's not about aesthetics anymore. Now it's about safety. So that's the second point. And then the third one, I do agree with you. You know, the fact is, Senator, and I brought this up earlier. We had a PSEG spokesperson on. You know, Sandy 2012, October 29th, we'll never forget it. Have we not learned? I think of the word antiquated. We had antiquated systems on the railroad. We had antiquated systems LIPA before the takeover PSEG and everything else. You know, it's been ample time, okay? It's been 7.5 years. So the question comes about, where are we technology-wise? Construction. I can't, you know, you're blaming substations. Okay, Sandy was flooding. What happened here now with 27 floods substations in and around? To me, it's no excuse. And I feel bad for a lot of people. I know a lot of people, you know, with refrigeration and medications. And I read a story today with kids with cystic fibrosis. I mean, it's real stuff. Listen, you can't tell me the phone line went out. Well, yeah, how do you allow that to happen? I mean, come on. You got to have backup systems. Yeah. Okay, you got to have backup systems. Now, listen, I appreciate the cleanup, the 2,500 or so linemen from in and around. I like the cutting of the branches in anticipation of storms. Overall, they've done an okay job. But you know what? Crunch time. Okay? I mean, Tom Brady, when he's on the 6-yard line in the Super Bowl and 105 million people watching, is he fumbling the ball? No. He's going to take it across the goal line and score and win a championship like he always does. And that's the same type of mentality we need these folks to have. They don't have that. We got to fix that because we don't know when the next storm is. That's the problem. And then we're in the same boat again. Yep. So we have to fix it. I do agree. Give me a final word, Senator Brooks.
You know, this year, 2020, hasn't been a good one. We've faced a lot of catastrophic events, and clearly we weren't ready. We still don't have a national direction on some of this stuff, which is a major problem. I think here on Long Island, to any of the governmental agencies and like LIPA and the PSEG, the water companies, the MTA, no more excuses. You know these events are coming. You have to put together solid response plans. You know the people in our communities that are on various life support systems. That have got to have electricity immediately. We probably need to get a situation, identify some of those, and put together some kind of a backup power system for them to protect them. But no more excuses. When that happens, when that fell apart, the guy at the top is the guy responsible. Not turn around and say, well, we planned on Jimmy coming with a tow truck, but he didn't make it. No. Your plan has to have backups. Your plan has to work. and we can accept no excuses anymore, anywhere. Public safety is paramount. These companies are paid a fortune in terms of the rates that they are charging. They're not allowed to fail anymore. There's no more excuses.
Great, Senator. Listen, we will follow your trend. I know you're up for re-election. We'll have you on a couple of times. Always enjoy talking with you. Plenty of issues to discuss, so we look forward to the next time. How's that, sir?
Sounds good, my friend. Good to talk to you, and let's hope for sunny skies for a couple of days so all this work can be completed, and then hope that the people in management understand they screwed up, and they got a lot of work to do, and they don't have a lot of time to do it in.
With you on that, State Senator John Brooks. Senator, you stay healthy, and good luck with that tree, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, my friend. Bye-bye.
You got it, State Senator Brooks.